we're going to talk about a topic that I think without our explanation will be one of the most depressing thoughts that anybody could have. I think when we're finished, it's going to be one of the most inspiring thoughts. For some reason, it comes before Shavuos, and it just happens to have a great relevance to Shavuos also. The pasuk that we're doing Hey, Vav, Zion, they all have basically one thought. People come, people go, everything remains the same. Next sentence, the sun rises, the sun sets, eventually just goes back to where it started from. Third sentence, all the rivers go to the ocean, and the ocean is not full because the underground tributaries bring it back to where it came from, which means pretty depressing feeling. Think you're doing something, nothing ever changes. You do this, you do that, at the end of the day you accomplish nothing. That's what the sentence says, and that's, I think, a very depressing feeling. The sun rises, the sun sets, goes back to where it started. People go, people come, everything, nothing changes. Water flows this way, eventually it all goes back to where it came from. I think the message there is that it's a pretty horrible feeling. You know, everybody thinks they're accomplishing something, and then the end of the day, nothing gets accomplished. I think that's a pretty depressing feeling. I mean, you know, as Jews, it's not hard to realize the simple truth that I don't know if there's a Jew alive today that has four generations of money. I really don't know if there's one Jew alive today that has four generations of money. Because the Jews in Europe lost their money. It's a very, very frightening feeling. People were fabulously wealthy. At the end of the day, I lived in Israel when I first moved there in 69, and personal top of me lived in a one-bedroom apartment. Like, it was two rooms. I was told, and it was a building that only had heat 3 hours a day, maybe. And that's when the only hot water came from the heat. I'm talking about in the 60s. And I found out that the person who lived over me was the richest, one of the richest Jews in the world prior to the nationalization of all the copper. Well, he'd been fabulously wealthy in Europe. You know, it was Romania, Hungary. And I'm not sure if the money was taken. I don't think it was by Hitler, I think it was before that. They nationalized all the copper mines. He had huge amounts of copper. I mean, in those days, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's what he wound up. As Jews, we know that feeling. That's a very, very depressing feeling. What's Shlomo Melk doing? Trying to depress us here? No matter what you do, nothing changes. I think what he's saying here, and I think it's one of the most important messages, and it's something to figure out how to get this message to our children. He's 100% right. There's no real accomplishment. I'll give you another example. This is even on a more tragic note in a way. Rabbi Meir Shapiro built the first yeshiva in Europe with a dormitory. Until then, it was a very demeaning experience to be a yeshiva bocher. You had a place to learn, but you had to be farmed out for different days for families to eat who themselves were poor, and you usually wound up with very meager food the days you got an invitation. It was called eating teg, and it was a very demeaning thing, and people didn't have, and they had a little bit they kept their kids, and it was very, very he decides going to build a yeshiva with a dormitory, and he made a magnificent building. Of course, money was a problem. It was in the early 30s. The world was still coming out of the recession. And he stopped. Couldn't get any money. But we'll lend you money, Rabbi. Said, okay, no problem. He took out a life insurance policy on his life for 5 million kroner, whatever it was. And anybody who gives money, they're going to get paid back. When he dies, they'll get paid back. And that's the way he finished the yeshiva. That was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years later, he died. It was an innovation. Now all yeshivas in the world follow that innovation. He's the one also brought the Daf Yomi thought. Everybody's learning Daf Yomi. It was his idea. 5 years after he died, the yeshiva no longer was. It was in the hand of the Nazis. Today it's a nursing school. And now I think the Jewish community bought it back some years ago, so it should have some kind of Jewish Lublin. Mati Shiffman actually gave one of the on the yard site of the dot on the one time they made the Siyum Hashas happened to be they made in Lublin during one of the marches, one of the trips, so they made a at Siyum Hashas there. There was hundreds of people. Baruch Hashem, it came out I think the day after Beli Melech of Lezhinsk yard site, so there was people who had, before the yard site, people came after the yard site, and they had a couple of days that they celebrated the Daf Yomi there. I mean, there's a man that gave his whole life and tremendous effort to build the yeshiva and innovation. After it was built, 5 years he was dead, and 5 years later, it wasn't the yeshiva. It was the Nazis used it for some office building during the war. So that's what life is. You know, sometimes it doesn't happen so fast. So it's 50 years later, go to some of the most fabulous communities, where there's fabulous Jewish communities. Next time anybody, you know, on their trips goes into Des Moines, Iowa, there's a synagogue there that's magnificent. A magnificent synagogue. The picture, you walk up to the of a Lithuanian rabbi. I don't know who he was, but he was an outstanding Talmud Chacham, I'm sure. And he came and said, sure, has a gym, a huge kitchen and a catering hall. A mikveh, a whole classroom building. There's no Rosh Hashanah, they didn't have minyan this year. I think not at night, maybe a day. They had one day, they had 12 people, but yeah. Everybody thinks they're doing, and all of a sudden. So we know this feeling. We know this feeling. That's what Shlomo Noach. That's a very depressing feeling. I'll tell you what Shlomo Noach is really saying. And this is, I think, a fascinating thing. And I say it's the most important message to get to our family. You're right. Everything you do makes no difference. At the end of the day, like they say in English, what goes around comes around. Nothing's going to be accomplished. People aren't going to change, and everything is the same. And everybody thinks they're changing the world. At the end of the day, everything is the same. 100%. Therefore, what? Therefore, be depressed? No. Therefore, the message is, it's only how you play the game. It has nothing to do with accomplishment. Everything is how you play the game. In Monopoly, you know, at the end of the day, you won the game. You can, with all the Monopoly money, you can buy nothing. But how you play the game. That's life, is how we do things. The end is not the result. The purpose, the method itself becomes the end. The process is the end. Hashem is testing us. Are we acting the way we should act? Not whether or not we're accomplishing. The accomplishments are nothing. People are fabulously wealthy. They come generally impoverished. And people are impoverished. I mean, that's a fact. You know, magnificent kahilas are destroyed, and things that were barren wastelands become the Comus of Tyre, and next generation will switch around. It's 2 generations, 3 generations. I mean, just take a look at things. You think about the European. You know, I was just talking small. I really was very small minded just to talk about one yeshiva, about Warsaw. Over 2 million Jews living in Warsaw, World War II. You can imagine a city of 2 million Jews with thousands of. Thousands of Bati Midrashim. Nothing now. Zero. Nothing. has nothing to do with. Nobody here has to accomplish anything. The measure is, how did you live? How did you play the game? It has nothing to do with accomplishment. It's all about how did you handle the process? Learning everything. I say this is the most important message of life. Nothing is what you accomplished. The only accomplishment is how you played. Were you moral? Were you ethical? Did you do things right? You won. You didn't. Whatever you accomplished, that's... You know, we like to measure ourselves by our accomplishments. Well, those accomplishments are just illusions, because the next generation, they're all gone. How did you play the game? Let's talk about our families. That's really it's such an important message with our children, too. Okay, you're going to get this degree and that degree. Who knows what you'll do with your degrees? You'll build a magnificent business. You'll build a magnificent firm. You'll be a magnificent practice. 50 years later, nobody remembers you. Makes no difference. The people have to move out. The whole firm is gone. The whole clinic is gone. Nothing. It's not 50 years. It's 100 years. The only question is, how did you do it? It doesn't make a difference what grade a child gets in school. We're so enamored with accomplishment. That's what we tell our children. Oh, you got that. You got an A. That's totally irrelevant. You got a degree, and finally you did this. And at the end of the day, the degree became worth nothing. You have to move from Russia to the United States, and your medical... You can become an orderly here with a medical degree from Russia. You can be an orderly, or a medical degree from Cuba. You can become an orderly here. Yeah, okay, I mean, it's not nothing an orderly. You can make $12 an hour and clean latrines. I mean, you can do that, but everything that you did means nothing. We're very myopic if we don't think it can happen to our children. It happened to our parents and grandparents. The same thing could happen. You have to tell your children, not about that. What kind of process? Did they study the way they should? Did they act the way they should? Then you won. You're not responsible for the outcome. All you're responsible for is the process, the method, how you do. How did you play the game? I don't use the word game, but the same thing. Life is really, that's what he's saying, it's a game. You think there's a result? There's no results. That's exactly what he's saying. The only question is, how did you play? And therefore, you have a child, oh, he knows all this, he knows all... Did he study? Does he have good work habits? Did he learn? That's what makes a difference. The child that's not as bright, studies more, and has a better work ethic, is more disciplined, they get a higher grade than the child who got easy breeze through the classes, because it's not about anything in life. It should not be measured ever by accomplishments. It's only about process. You want to know what child of yours you should respect? The child who does the process the best. Comes home, sits down, does their homework, does their work, has time to help at home too. All the values that you want. And you know, we're all crazy. No. What grade they get at the end? That grade makes no difference. How many girls have a grade if they haven't used their college degree 1 minute in their life? How many people have all kind of college degrees, didn't use it 1 minute in life, they made money in business? The only measure is, how is a person acting? And it makes no... When I went to school, they used to say like this. A students, they become college professors. B students, they become judges. C students, they make money. And you're all machine, you know, yeah. And if you make money, what do you have from that? You probably still live way over your means. You probably... Everything is just about process. And the thing is to teach our children, it's how they're acting, how they're following the rules. Then that's a success. And that's what you should respect. And you respect that child feels good about themselves, and then you're reinforcing and buttressing the fact that I have to be disciplined and moral and ethical instead of looking for results. Results are only illusions. That's what Shlomo said. All results are illusions. Because what life throws, in one generation, they're how many people were fabulous, had fabulous businesses in Israel, in Gush Katif. Fabulous businesses over there. Well, if they took a land that was nothing. They have anything now? Nothing. A lot of them live in, like, literally trailers with the only dividing was sheets. Okay, you know, the government treated them nicely and I had all kind of dreams. That's an old time. Hundreds of families, like us families, people that were just as idealistic, very committed to Israel, very committed to religion. Hundreds of families living, you can't imagine how horrible they're living. But that's not the issue. Nobody has it. We just delude ourselves when we start thinking we accomplished something. So not Shlomo Mel is not trying to get us depressed. It's just change your focus. Give somebody a feeling of well-being and a feeling of achievement for how they're acting. That's the achievement. The means is the end. Not that the end is the result, the illusory result. The means itself is the end. How are you acting? How are you behaving? How moral a person you are. Nothing else makes a difference. To live in the illusion of accomplishment. Accomplishment is nothing. And I say we all start off depressed, but it's the most liberating feeling. You understand why it's such an unbelievably uplifting feeling? Because anything that depends in result means you have to rely on other people. At the end of the day, you need customers. You need all different kind of, you know, circumstances. The economy has to be good. You have the most fabulous business. The economy is no good, and you're dealing with luxury items. You're not going to make money. So you need a lot of external things. Call it mazel. Call it intelligence. But whatever it is, it requires something that's not in your hands. The only thing that's 1,000% in your hands and your ability is how you act. That's totally up to you. It doesn't make a difference. No customer walks into the store. No patient walks into the office. Nobody. It's not about that. It's just not about, you know, also they could, the many people in Germany, all of a sudden in 1933, they passed the Nuremberg laws, and I think already I think that you weren't allowed to use a Jewish professional. Already in 33, not a couple years later, you couldn't go to a Jewish doctor. You couldn't go, I mean, a guy, you couldn't go. I mean, your degree, your parnassa is finished. It's finished. You know, Chavez could do the same thing in Venezuela. It's not too far away from that.
Alabama.
The only thing that's totally in your control is how you act. So it's really the most liberating thing. You're not responsible for the result. You're not responsible for success. Success is an illusion. It's only about process. It's only about doing the action. We all wouldn't be, probably the biggest, you know, question is, okay, there's scammers out there, Ponzi schemes. But there's one thing that we don't think about in a Ponzi scheme. The Ponzi scheme needs, what else do you need besides to be a crooked mind? What else do you need? And be very avaricious. What else do you need for Ponzi schemes? Excuse me? Yeah, you need victims. How come there's so many victims in America in Ponzi schemes? How do we get some? These are intelligent people. These were people who ran good businesses, made a lot of money. How do you have so many victims? The Ponzi scheme. Where did all the victims come from? You know, our great grandparents, most of them didn't have money, but I assure you they wouldn't have been victims of Ponzi schemes. You know why they're not victims of Ponzi schemes? It's hard to get by. Because at one time people thought that in order to make money you had to work. Actually, you had to do a day's work. Today, the American mentality has nothing, there's no respect for working. Working means nothing, it's about making money. We spoke a little bit about this week, last week, but I'm giving now another insight. If it's not about working, then when someone sells you, you can get rich overnight. He's talking to you. You buy into that philosophy. Once you buy into that philosophy, he has you before you start. You are somebody that thinks that making money and work is never some, you know, people without too much intelligence have to work. There's no respect for process today. It's all about process. Now I want to say something very relevant to Shavuos. This is the most unbelievable thing. Learning Torah is all about process. This is let me explain what that means. And it's the greatness of the Jewish people is the most serious amount of time, and the most highest level of learning is the study of the Talmud. And the Talmud, eventually, studying Talmud correctly and properly and following the conclusion, a person can become a great expert in Jewish law. You know that in studying Talmud, you study the majority opinion, you study the minority opinion, you study was a question that was refuted. You can study pages of Talmud, and at the end of 3-4 pages, which can take months to study, you come to a conclusion. You come to a conclusion. But for thousands, tens of thousands of hours was without conclusion. Because the study of Torah is also a process. It's the seeing the truth in different opinions. It's the analyzing truth. It doesn't make a difference what the ultimate conclusion is. What the law ultimately comes out, that's important because we have to know how to act. I'll give you an example. There's a bris on Shabbos. So the Talmud goes through a discussion. You can make the bris on Shabbos. What about you don't have a knife? Can you make the knife on Shabbos? Talmud says the majority opinion is you can't. It's a minority opinion that you can. I mean, a minority means that we don't follow. Talmud goes on to say, that's the name of that rabbi, the minority opinion, is Rabbi Yishmael. The Talmud says, in the place of Rabbi Yishmael, he was the rabbi. They didn't make the knife on Shabbos. If there was no knife, they made the knife on Shabbos. That's without any slur on him, without any putting him down. He's one of the greatest rabbis. Because majority and minority opinion, the minority opinion is not less true than the majority. It's just as true. All the different opinions studied by serious scholars, Torah is a very infinite thing. How you act, okay, we need a halacha, but in the place of Rabbi Shmuel, where he was the authority, we followed his opinion. And when we study the Talmud, we study his opinion just as much time as we study the opinion of the other rabbis. Or when there's an argument between Beis Shammai and Hillel, most of the times the law is like Hillel. But we spend not one iota less time studying Shammai, because it's not about just the practicality of a result. There's a process of thinking. In order to be a jurist on the Sanhedrin, a person had to be able to advance 150 arguments, a fortiori arguments, based on all Torah sources, how one would be allowed to, that a sheret, say, a dead being, is not unclean. Now it's clear it is unclean, but you had to be able to advance 150 arguments to show why it shouldn't be unclean. Which means it's all about being involved in thinking over God's truths and understanding. We're not looking for conclusion. A conclusion eventually comes because we have to know what to do. But learning is not in order to know what to do. Learning is an end in itself too. The whole Judaism is an end in itself. The study of Torah, which is what we consider to be the prime contribution of the Jewish people to the world, or that God gave us, that's supposed to be the thing we're most. It's not the study of what to do. That's a very superficial way of studying. It's studying the process. It's getting into the arguments and discussing the argument and knowing both sides of the issue. It's all about process. It's not about result. Even learning Torah. And everything else I think we understand clear. You know, you have a child that's making them, they get an A, and they cheated. Is that? Or even if they didn't cheat, they were so smart they didn't study, or the child that studied. Who's a healthier child? Who's a better student? Who has better training for the future? The process. And I'm saying, even the study of Torah, so that's a very important Shulis message. When we accepted the Torah, we didn't accept we're going to study the majority opinion. We're going to study what the law is. You can study all year and not reach any conclusions of how we practically do things. It's the analysis of God's train of thought of the truth that God taught us. It's all about process. Nothing is about results. Results are not in our hands. Results have a lot to do with things that have nothing to do with us. The only thing that's in our hand is process, and everything, even in the study of Torah, it's about process. That's I think it's a tremendously invigorating message. I don't have to be successful. My kids don't have to be successful. They have to do an honest day's work. You try and train them that they have good work habits, good priorities in life. Nothing else makes a difference, because how things are going to turn out, even if they're successful in secular terms, there's no reason to think it's going to be, if it's here 50 years from now, it's gone. I'm not even talking about all the things that could happen to people. Accidents, home accidents, car accidents, someone dying. I mean, I'm not even talking about that. That's also, it's nothing more than about doing what's right. And studying Torah is exactly the same thing. It's about learning about truth, knowing truth. And truth is not more true, because that's the law. Not the law is just as true, is true and just as connected to God. The school of Shammai was not one iota less important, not one iota less close to God than the school of Hillel. Why the majority opinion follows a certain way, that's something else, that maybe the people could handle that better. In fact, that's really what it says. And actually, what the Talmud says regarding Shammai and Hillel, that the more erudition and the more profound thinkers were in the school of Shammai. And that the way people live in this world, they can't handle such sophistication. That's just for how to do things are. But the truths are absolutely the same. We're interested in the truth. We're not interested in results. Just that you have to know practically what to do. But I think that's the main message at home. We start respecting our children around the house for how they behave, how they act, and all type of action. They're helping, their work ethic. Instead of all the things that we do respect them, what did they achieve? Those achievements mean nothing. It's like the wrong message. Because usually higher achievers has usually very little to do that they have a better work ethic. It means they had more brain power, more talent. That's a gift from God. So this is what we're praising a person for. If God gave them a gift of a voice or a gift of an IQ, it's all the wrong message. It's only about teaching our children the value of what they do, their work, their effort, their following a moral and ethical path. And by the way, the greatest thing about that means it's in their hands. What could be more empowering to a person? You can be as great as you want. But I can't be as successful as I want, but I can surely be as great as I want, because greatness means how I'm behaving. And that's totally in my hands. That's what we have to change. I don't think there's anything more empowering than this message. Zero success. That doesn't mean that part of being responsible, the other part, necessarily, you have to use your intelligence to try. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm studying in school, and I'm not going to go do something that gives me any practical chance of a parnassah. Of course, you have to study, but whether you'll have a parnassah or you won't, who knows about that? Who knows you'll be living here in 10 years? Who knows you'll be alive? Who knows where the Jews will be today? I think it's a real question that any intelligent person better ask: where they're going to be 2 years from now? Where's a Jew going to be living 2 years from now? Hopefully, we need great rachmei shemayim. But I know where I can be. That's up to me. Not where I'm living, how much money I have, how I'm acting. So in a way, it's the most empowering, but it's also very frightening. We are responsible for ourselves. Now, we can't blame God. The day after the Holocaust, we got thrown out of this country, got thrown out of America, maybe, God forbid. It's nothing pending that. Doesn't make a difference if you're here or there. How did you behave? That's the message you have to get to our kids. It's a great equalizer in the family. We've so bought into the secular notion of success, which is what he's ranting against here. Success? Water. Sun. People. There's no success. That's the three sentences. There's nothing. There's no not nature. There's no accomplishments. There are no accomplishments. Everything goes back to where it started from. Therefore, we can do absolutely whatever we want and how we play. That's what we're being judged for. I think it's a good preparation for Shavuos. Be mekabel b'Torah, and I'll do this. You want your children to be decent human beings following the values that the Torah teaches us. That's it. How they turn out, Scholit, it makes no difference. It really does make a difference. And you have to make the effort. One thing the person has to study. The person also has to do gemilus chasotim. There's a lot of things that the child has to do. You have to make sure they're doing whatever they have to do. And don't look about success. I once thought from the Narishkeit, the way we measure success. What color shirt they're wearing? If my kid had been there, what color shirt he's wearing? That's how sick it's gotten. It's just about how they're living. That's what we have. And we really need to focus on that. Let kids feel good about themselves too. Every child will get according to what they've earned. The success is the means is the success, not the outcome. That's all I wanted to say today. I'm starting to work it on myself. When I become successful in this, I'll let you know. I'll just tell you an interesting thing where it really hit me, and I don't know if this is the whole answer to this. This is a question that never bothered me before. We all know Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students, and when they died, there was nobody left. The Talmud says that the languages, the world was desolate of Torah. So he had the top 24,000 students, and there was nobody other. I guess everybody considered that they all died, and he started over again. He took five students. Can you imagine that? Anybody that has the slightest interest in, I'm running. I own what's the name of that? Walton. What's the name of that story? Walmart. I own a Walmart. I'm the Walmart of Torah, all over the world. And the whole business collapses, dies. Nothing is left. And he opens up a little candy store, you think anybody could do that? You know, usually when a person measures himself by success, and the success is, he literally sees his whole life dead in front of him, and he starts again. And you know that's a person that has nothing. I mean, I still don't know where a person gets the courage. I have a lot of questions on the story that I never thought till this year. One question I'll let you think about till next year, maybe we'll get an answer. Why didn't he think that if all 24,000 students died, maybe he wasn't a good Rebbe, maybe he shouldn't be in the yeshiva business? I think that's a real question. I don't have a good answer yet to that question. You're in charge of everything, everybody dies, you don't think maybe you didn't get the messages over. But one thing for sure, anybody who measures success, if that happens to a person, he goes to the top of the top of the Twin Towers and jumps off. And Walton, what's his name, Sam Walton? You imagine, he's multi-trillionaire, whatever. I mean, I don't even know the numbers of money he has, or if that would all be his. And all of a sudden, he loses it overnight. No problem, I'm going to open up a little candy store. On Lincoln Road, Sundays I'll have a... Could you imagine anybody? He has to be dead, emotionally dead inside. So here he has 24,000 students, the sages of Israel. He's the teacher. They all die. He starts again. That means he didn't measure success. It means he didn't measure himself by his success. That at least is saying that. The other question I'm letting you think about for next year. We'll all think about it. Have a great youngest. Great youngest.